A changing of the guard at AOPA after 18 years. Meet the new guy. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. On January 1st, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association will get its first new president in 18 years in Craig Fuller. ANN's Jim Campbell had the chance recently to talk with Craig about taking over the top leadership role in General Aviation's largest membership organization. We'll hear that talk in two parts, today and tomorrow.
Well, folks, there are big changes coming. And no, we're not talking about the election. We're actually talking about huge changes at the helm of AOPA. For many years, there's been tremendous leadership. And woe betide the guy that has to fill those shoes. And speaking of which, Craig Fuller, come on down.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Well, sir, I have to tell you, I heard this phenomenally great question the other day of one of the folks running for president right now going, with all that's happened in the last couple of months, are you really sure you want this job? So let me start my first question to you. With all that's happening out there right now, are you really sure you want this job?
You know, I'm actually eager for January 1 to get here and really honored and looking forward to starting this to get and have the chance to represent pilots and general aviation. I've been a pilot for over 40 years now, and I've been a member since 1973. And you could not find something that would please me more than to allow me to take the experience I've had in government and politics and communications and public affairs and put that to work on behalf of general aviation. And yes, while there are definitely challenges out there, I do feel good about the future for a lot of reasons, and I look very much forward to being here at AOPA and making our future in general aviation just as exciting as our past has been.
Well, before we get into the hard stuff, I have to comment that getting this job is kind of like getting the keys to the candy store, isn't it?
Well, and it's a very big candy store. You know, I think the reality that I have discovered since coming here, and it's been, a transition that spanned now several months, is that even as a member since 1973, I really had only a partial idea of all the things that AOPA is involved in, all the programs they have for members, all the work they do around the country. So it's a big operation. It has a lot of moving parts. But I must say, it is nice pulling up every day to your office and at an airport and across from your hangar. It's a very nice opportunity.
Well, I'll tell you what, the one thing, though, that has to be at the top of your mind is that you are coming in on the heels of a fellow who has, without a doubt, probably achieved the most positive reputation in the general aviation, if not the aviation industry, for his work over the course of a number of years. That's got to be a really tough act to follow.
You know, I actually have nothing but admiration for Phil Boyer. He has, as you've said, done an incredible job. Just looking at his schedule is a bit daunting to see the places he goes in any given week or month, frankly, let alone year. But we each have our styles. It's also remarkable to think that an organization formed in 1939 has only had up to this point three presidents, and that I'm going to have the privilege of being the fourth. Which I think says a lot for the board and for the membership and the support that the president has. I have enjoyed getting to know the board, and I've already been out meeting with members at airport events as well as other places. So I'm sure I'll do the job a little differently. I will always look at Phil as a model, frankly, for how you do the job, right and serve the interests of general aviation. And I tell you, the nicest thing about having this long transition is I had not met him before, and we've become good friends. We fly together, we go to events together, so it's been time well spent, as far as I'm concerned.
Outstanding. What kind of transition training, if you will, or acclimation is taking place here? I would imagine stepping into the shoes of somebody who's been in place for as long as Phil has had, and then of course with the complexity of the job requires quite a bit of a ramp up.
That's a good question. And one of the, I would say, kind of behind-the-scenes stories maybe about this transition is that, unlike most transitions I've seen in the Washington, D.C. area among association leaders, that tend to oftentimes be swift and sudden. This one has been long in the making. Phil made it clear to the board and to the executives here that he intended to retire this year. Actually, I think he speculated initially maybe it would come a little bit earlier than this year, but he agreed to stay on. As a result of that, this has been a very carefully planned, orchestrated process in which I was given the time to get around, get to meet some of our organizations that are part of the AOPA family of organizations. I got to spend time with the top executive leadership here. I've even gotten a trip in over to Europe to meet with some of the AOPA leadership in Europe with IAOPA. And Phil has on top of everything else he's done, he's made this transition process one that's allowed me to kind of touch each part of the organization and get to know the people in it before January 1 when I've actually got to sit down and be involved in making some of the decisions. We've also had a process, I'm pleased to say, from the beginning where he said, hey, look, if it concerns 2008, I'll worry about it. If it involves planning for 2009, it's all yours. And it's certainly, I will say, been a collaborative process. But even over the last 5-6 months, the process has been one in which that distinction was drawn right from the beginning, and people worked with that understanding. And so this has really been I think almost a textbook example of a good transition.
Outstanding. But then again, AOPA has been nothing if not prepared.
I think that's the nature of pilots. It's certainly the nature of Phil Boyer, and it's served the organization well, and it's a great lesson to all of us.
We'll be back for more with ANN's Jim Campbell and incoming AOPA President Craig Fuller in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plagg. Today, ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell is talking to Craig Fuller, who takes over as president of AOPA January 1st.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. Obviously, you're a pilot, and I'll get to the really good stuff here in a minute. But one of the things that intrigues me the most when we became aware of your selection, matter of fact, we had some fun actually breaking this story a couple of days before AOPA was able to discuss it publicly. But you've got a political background, and right now there's a very good chance, and let me preface that this interview is being done just a few days before the election, but there's a very good possibility that general aviation and the people who frequent general aviation might have something of a political target on its back post-election because people perceive us as, quote-unquote, rich guys. They obviously haven't seen the fuel bill in my glass here lately. However, with your background, I got to believe that's going to be a very powerful force.
Well, I hope that's the case. You know, I certainly jumped into this wanting to take the full extent of my background and experience and the relationships I have and put all those chips on the table on behalf of general aviation. There really is no other, you know, interest that I'm involved in or represent. You know, I came to Washington, D.C. in 1981. I was 30 years old. President Reagan had been elected president, and I found myself in the White House for what I thought would be 2 or 3 years before I went back to California. It turned out to be 8 years, and then, of course, I've never moved away from the Washington, D.C. area. In some ways, I know it's hard for some people to believe, but in many ways, Washington, D.C. is a bit like a small town, and once you have one of these kinds of experiences, in many ways the experience of a lifetime, to serve in government, you get acquainted and you get to know a vast array of people. And our issues in general aviation are not partisan. There's nothing partisan about air safety. There's nothing partisan about the contributions general aviation makes across the country every single day. The job is really one of communicating those contributions and talking about what we're engaged in general aviation in ways that make sense to the people who make our policies. And I have really, even since the first time I got here, and it's all, it's, I point out to people oftentimes that when President Reagan was elected, the Senate and the House were controlled by the Democrats, and so a bipartisan approach was absolutely essential, and I've worked that way for the last 20, 25 years or more. But the point I guess I'm making is it's the relationships in this town that really can make a difference. I ran in recently to the two gentlemen who were running Barack Obama's transition, a job that I had, hard to believe, 20 years ago for then-President-elect Bush. And not only have we known each other for a long time, these two gentlemen and I, but they're now sitting in the same kind of position I was in. And so we kind of compared notes. We talked about the challenges ahead for them. One of them, Tom Daschle, former Senator Tom Daschle, is actually an AOPA member. And so I as I told him, well, I work for you now. So he, I said, don't hesitate to call. But I think the point I'm making is that in these jobs, representing something as large as general aviation really requires a bipartisan approach. It requires reaching out to the leadership, not only in Washington, frankly, but also to our governors across the country. And that is something I've had the opportunity to do now for a couple of decades. And like I said, I can't imagine anything I would rather be doing than working in this area on behalf of general aviation.
You've also got a lobbying background, which I find not only intriguing, but particularly appealing, because there are times, especially when there's something that's negative about general aviation being reported. We've had our share of public accidents and a few things that have made us seem to be a lot less appealing than I believe the industry to be. But you've had to go out and either defend or promote at times some topics that may not be particularly popular. Can you talk about that background a little bit and how that's going to apply to your future roles?
Sure. I guess at a very early age, actually, I was at UCLA. I got involved in state government and was lobbying on behalf of students, and as a matter of fact, before the California legislature. I've always found lobbying or advocacy to be actually a very important part of the public policymaking process, because I look at people who lobby as people who, if they're successful, are putting facts and information in front of decision makers. And in order to do that successfully, you have to be trusted and you have to be respected and you have to be somebody whose word can be counted upon as being accurate. And so regardless of, you know, where I've traveled and what I've done, I have always tried to represent a client's interest, a company's interest, or an industry's interest, you know, carefully, accurately, and I've been proud to do it. Probably the last big area I worked in was for 6.5 years running an association that represented retail pharmacy. And they had a very important perspective on the process by which Medicare was going to be reformed in this country. And we worked for a couple of years opposing legislation that we didn't think would work, that we didn't think would be right for seniors, and that wouldn't work for the industry. And then we found measures, again on a bipartisan basis, that we felt we could support, or at least constructively shape, and we worked hard to develop what ultimately became the Medicare Reform Act of 2003. And then we worked with the regulators to make sure the regulations were workable. So it's a playing field I'm comfortable with. I'm actually pleased to be able to engage in it. The leadership of in Congress in some of the important areas in which we work are people I've known for a long time, both on the House and Senate side, Republicans and Democrats. I've had some wonderful notes from them and conversations with them about assuming this position. So I do believe that the job requires a presence in Washington, D.C., and frankly a presence in some of the state capitals as well, and I look forward to playing that role.
Well, there's no question that the role of AOPA president, which has become increasingly more political over the years as, you know, we became part of the political powder keg at one time or another, is only going to become more so. There's just no way to get away from that at all.
It definitely caught my attention when I was looking at some of the member survey material that for many years, the number one reason for being a member of AOPA was the very, very fine magazine, I should say magazines now. That's still very important, but it's number two. And number one is advocacy. I think when people join an organization like this, they have in their mind that they're counting on us to defend their freedom to fly and to fly without some of the adverse costs and expenses that government can impose on you. So I will say everywhere I've gone that those two words, user fees, have popped up, and people appreciate what the AOPA has been able to do the last 2 years to prevent the imposition of those user fees.
In our next ANN special feature, we'll resume Jim Campbell's conversation with incoming AOPA President Craig Fuller. Tomorrow, we'll hear how Craig's own rich background in aviation started with his father, who was in the Army Air Corps. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association can be found on the web at www.aopa.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.